Don't Blink, Season 9, Episode 8, The Zygon Inversion.
Hello, sweetie. Welcome to Don't Blink, a fan podcast dedicated to Doctor Who. Grab your bow ties, 3D glasses, and sonic screwdriver and come along for some timey-wimey adventures across the Doctor Who universe. And now, here are your hosts, David and Jeremy.
Well, hello, loyal listener. You're listening to Don't Blink on Golden Spiral Media. My name is David.
And I'm Jeremy.
And you're listening to us today discussing Season 9, Episode 8 of Doctor Who, The Zygon Inversion. And this story has absolutely blown up, don't you think, Jeremy? I've been seeing the war speech all over the internet this morning, so.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. BuzzFeed has started talking about the anti-war speech at the end, and so I've seen this just plastered all over my Facebook today.
All right, I've actually not seen it at all on my Facebook, but it probably says a lot about our friends.
Well, all BuzzFeed.
Very true, very true. But yeah, I don't know, I actually didn't take note of the war speech myself a whole lot. I know you probably did, and we'll get into that here in a bit. But I do know, as one of our listeners, Fred, pointed out on Twitter, I was correct. Kate did know that the Zygon 2 weeks ago was a Zygon and gave it five quick rounds or five rapid rounds or something like that, right?
My wife was trying to figure out why I was yelling like it was a touchdown when she said that. So it's quite hard to explain after the fact.
All right. I bet you were excited as the, I want to call you a fanboy.
Yeah, go on. I'll take it.
As the fanboy you are. So
that's right.
Well, speaking of fanboys, touchdowns, and war speeches, what did you give this episode of Doctor Who?
9 rounds rapid. Easy.
Oh, man. All right. I should have wrote that in because that's what I was going to use.
So sorry.
Yeah. I'll give it 9 untimely winks.
That's good, too. That's good too. Oh, I'm glad we both liked it. I mean, it was, it was a breath of fresh air. It felt very Moffat-y, but I also liked that it was kind of co-written by someone else. And I think that actually played off really, really well. So it felt Moffat-ish, but with a freshness to it, which I really enjoyed.
Moffat-ish. We need to coin that term. But yeah, it did have kind of his feel to it, but it had a great continuation of where we came last week, with the writing, and I actually have that incorrect in the notes. Peter Harness wrote again this episode.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You can just tell from watching it. You don't need to see the credits that Moffat had co-written this.
Yeah,
but in a good way. And it's sort of like it's one of those things you can just read the texture of something. Like to my mind, if you watch The Walking Dead, especially the first sort of few series, you can just tell it's adapted from a comic book. It's weird, but you can just see that.
Yeah, because it was actually a decent story.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, there's that too. And I did like Fear the Walking Dead, and I think I'm the only person that did, but.
No, I know one other person who's made the exact same comment that they were the only person that liked it. But, so there's two of you out there somewhere.
Did they make the Fear the Walking Dead? Was it? Were they in it?
Maybe. I don't know. Can't comment on that.
But this was a great story. I'm a big fan of Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, so I'm very pleased to have her on screen whenever she's in Doctor Who.
Yeah, last week we pointed out Osgood, and this week our actress of the week is Gemma Redgrave, who did play Kate. Now I looked up a few things on her, and I wasn't totally sure. She's the cousin of Vanessa or something. She isn't Vanessa Redgrave, is that right?
Yeah, I think that she's like Vanessa Redgrave's niece.
Niece, okay. Because I looked up Howard's End, which was a TV show or something in 1992, and Vanessa Redgrave was on the credits, but Gemma was in it. So I was kind of confused as to what role she had played, but I was looking at kind of her credits, and she seemed her best known fors are mostly late 80s, early 90s. You have Howard's End, and Dream Demon was in 88, and then Bromwell, which was in 95. And you really don't see much from her that's strong until 2002. And then I would say, honestly, Doctor Who. This is the only thing I've ever actually seen her in myself. Was she kind of one of those heartthrobs in her 30s over in the UK?
I think a little bit. Also, it feels, I mean, she was in something called The Buddha of Suburbia, which was sort of, I would say, an infamous piece of television. And I think that that was sort of her most memorable role. I don't know that she was always fully clothed in that show.
That might be why she was, I don't know, it might be why she was popular in other shows. Who knows?
So she has a very familiar face, but it feels like one of those people that sort of feels like they've always been really famous, but maybe actually hasn't. Mm. But, she's great. She has a slightly odd way of delivering lines, but I think she's, I don't know. I suppose I quite fancy her, so I shouldn't say that.
All right. Yeah. So she's actually I think she was born in, gosh, I looked it up earlier, 65 was it? You would know, you fancy her, right? Yeah, born in 65. So she's 50 years old, and she's pretty cute for a 50-year-old, but that's coming from a young whippersnapper of 30. So I don't know. That's our actress of the week, and I know we can all dream again together with Clara and maybe have some David-type dreams for Gemma. We'll see. But speaking of dreaming, Clara does find herself kind of in a dream mode again this week.
Yeah. Now, have you ever seen a program called Life on Mars?
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Oh, it's terrific. It's very good. John Sim is the sort of the star of the show. And obviously he played the Master in Tennant's Doctor Who. But they do it's a very similar thing. It's a guy that's in a coma, or has he traveled back in time, or it's a very uncertain thing, but he's communicating through a television set in this way that Clara is.
Okay.
So this was a straight up Life on Mars pastiche, but it feels like, again, it's sort of like a Moffat-y thing where it's, you know, you have, an interface to the outside world that's maybe unreliable. Like when Clara is in the Dalek in Asylum of the Daleks.
Right. Yeah. It's very interesting to see Clara in that position again. She's in this spot where she can't communicate, where she's trapped. We've seen that a couple of times. Here we saw kind of a shielder take on this dream state and controlling other people's perceptions with the Meyer helmet, which we saw this week as well in the dark room.
It's in the Black Archive, isn't it? It's in the background. Archive. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And I felt like a bad fan because I haven't screen capped that, but I'm sure there's so much cool stuff in the background, that little Easter eggs that I haven't noticed.
Yeah. I only noticed it, but that was during the walkthrough or the watches. I haven't actually looked at all of the screenshots of the episode yet. But yeah, so we do see that. So we kind of have somebody communicating in a sense apart from themselves. We see this multiple times. And we see, again, dreaming. And all I know about next week's episode is its name. And the name of next week's episode is Sleep No More. And I'm sitting here freaking out because you're probably going to be like, oh, yeah, it has nothing to do with what you have to say it has to do with. But I'm going, could this be the resolution of everything I've been hoping for? Probably not. But.
Well, we'll have to see. Well, we also saw the same kind of like sleep communication in the Christmas episode, too.
Yeah.
It reminds, and I think that at one point Clara actually says dream test, and she starts to read, but it's a funny thing. Two things that you can't do in a dream
is read.
Read is one, and stairs actually is another one. You can't travel upstairs.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we talk about that last season? Because I think isn't she on the stairs?
She is. She is. Absolutely. She does walk down the stairs, but, So it's very familiar ground, but it's very claustrophobic and sort of very mind warping. So I liked it a lot, and it was just a much more interesting way of having that dynamic playoff between her and Bonnie the Zygon.
Yeah, yeah. So she does have this telepathic communication type of link through the television set. I kind of imagine it didn't really need the set, but she turns it off later. So maybe I'm wrong there, but we have this kind of moment where she's trying to, I don't know how she figures it out, but maybe she kind of has in her mind, I can kind of manipulate this. And so the first missile that's fired at the end of last week's episode starts off this week's episode, misses because of Clara and how she kind of controlled it, which buys some time for the Doctor and Osgood to escape from the second missile.
For the Doctor and Osgood, but what about the crew?
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, you know, this is This is a pretty terrible job to have flying for UNIT. Their record so far that I can think of is 0-3. They're like the Kansas Jayhawks.
I'll take your word for that.
They're 0-9 at this moment.
It was funny because you do assume that the aircraft is going to survive, and then it really doesn't. I know there was a minor fuss, as there always is, about something in the UK about showing an aircraft blowing up because of things that happened. Yeah. And it's always a tough call. I mean, they have cut Doctor Who in the past because of things in the news. And I'm fine with them leaving it in. And I don't know really if they could have edited around that. But, there was a little bit of controversy about that.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of some of the controversy we had last week and a lot of the statements that they're making. It's definitely going to some, possibly leave a bad taste in people's mouths. But I think, personally, you know, if it was a British or an American airliner, they would have cut it. But because of it being Russian, a lot of people distance themselves because of it. It's a different nation. I don't know how the UK feels about Russia, since they're a lot closer than we are here in the United States. But sometimes I wonder if we can be a lot more callous to other people that, you know, we don't see on other sides of the world.
Yeah, well said. And I thought the same. If that had been a US or UK flight, they would never have shown that. But you know, it's just that you sort of can't help that. But it's always worth bearing in mind, you know. But you see the two parachutes coming down, and that almost felt old fashioned parachutes. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he bails out. He has this Union Jack parachute. I think Osgood makes a comment about that after they land, but I saw on Wikipedia they're saying that was a shout out to 007. I'm not really buying that as necessarily a shout out to 007. I'm thinking it's a shout out to Doctor Who being British. But
well, it's also The Spy Who Loved Me, which is Alan Partridge's favorite film, and it starts off with this ridiculous sequence with a Union Jack, and he's supposed to be a spy.
Yeah,
the one thing you wouldn't want to carry on your back is a parachute with your flag on.
Okay,
but I also, as a contact lens wearer and a spectacles wearer, I did love that Osgood has to pat around for her glasses. If you watch her, like her right hand is like searching the sand for her spectacles, which is sort of me every morning.
Yeah, you should leave them on your bedside table. They'd be easier to find.
You would think. if I'm cooking my gas, I can find a bedside table. But after that, it's all touch.
Fair enough. I normally take about 40 minutes to wake up, so I'm just kind of laying there thinking to myself, I hate mornings. But that's kind of a forced conversation, and we have a forced conversion in the next scene within Doctor Who. Bonnie's kind of forcing this Zygon that she finds at some point to kind of come into his true form, and it looks like he's diseased. It's something that I expected to see in Fringe, X-Files, or some other kind of creepy, who knows if aliens are real type show. But she forces this Zygon to become himself again, and I think it's very, very telling of her goal of just being this angry Zygon who's mad at the world. Some men just want to watch the world burn, that type of character.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. It sort of, there are lots of instances in sort of classic Doctor Who where people are turning into monsters, who are people, you know, and they sort of look at their arm and they see the infection or whatever. And it's that moment of panic, but it was weird. It was great that they did that same scene, but with a completely different context, you know?
Yeah. I like that. I mean, you mentioned that that's how humans would turn to weird, creepy things, but this Zygon has this understanding that he's this person as well. And he probably knows he's Zygon, but at the same time, he's still terrified to turn into a Zygon. That's kind of how it feels to me. I thought it was kind of fun to see what we have there.
Well, I feel like they should just let Zygons be Zygons, Jeremy.
I was hoping you wouldn't go there.
How did no one in the show make that gag?
I have no idea. But I was actually going to sign off this evening with that.
Oh, were you really?
You're taking
I'm so sorry.
Everything I had. All my puns are gone.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
No, it's good. It's a great pun. I might even use it again.
Yes. Listen for that pun. Let's see how many times in this podcast we can use that gag.
Yeah, but to see if maybe we're trying too hard to use that gag, but television writers as well seem to be almost trying too hard to bring the world, real world, into television with this uploading to, I don't know if it was actually YouTube or just a video site like YouTube, but she uploads this alien changing onto YouTube. And I'm thinking, how's this starting a war? First of all, doesn't the Earth already know about aliens? Haven't we seen ourselves turned into the master? There's no way we, I don't know. To me, in the universe of Doctor Who, people can't be that clueless, can they?
Well, exactly. And I think in the original series, that always used to be the thing, that there would normally be some explanation as to why, you know, the Loch Ness monster swam down the River Thames, yeah, yeah, or, you know, or the Yeti were in the underground or whatever it would be, that they would UNIT would cover it up, and there would always be a cover story about nerve gas or something like that, which was fun. The new series tends not to do that so much, where it does make you question that, you know. And also, just because you see a monster running, I mean, yeah, it's terrifying, but you wouldn't think, oh, that means everyone that I know might be a Zygon. Like, there's no context to it. So
at this point, all I saw was a human turn into a monster. I have no concept, as one of the people watching, that he's actually an alien. And we have the touches of the Men in Black, the U.S. Movie series, with the glasses at the end, the mind's being erased and the glasses on for the doctor. And then we have this scene where at the beginning, we as a human wouldn't know that. But at the same time, you say the new series hasn't really gone with the, let's cover this up. But they did early on with Eccleston and Tennant. We saw a lot more of UNIT trying to cover things up. But it seemed to me when Matt Smith came along, a lot of that went away. And a lot has continued to go away with Capaldi, because we're not seeing them make a concentrated effort to pretend that aliens don't exist. So I don't make the inference that they are making that effort. I make the inference that they've given up.
Yeah, I mean, that was the exciting thing about the Sound of Drums, which is one of my favorite Doctor Who's, when, you know, the Master takes over. It's the first time that they really say, okay, aliens are coming. The Prime Minister is telling the country, aliens are real, they're coming. And that gives a real buzz to the episode, and it just makes it feel like a slightly different change of gear. Whereas you don't really know what people know or believe in the Matt Smith Capaldi era. I also thought it was probably the weakest moment in the episode, where like the Zygon suits are really good, but like watching him run like that, it was almost not quite what it was, almost slightly naff.
It was almost like a certain video of, you know, like
the Bigfoot.
Bigfoot. Yeah, yeah. The Bigfoot video. It felt like that. And I thought they might be even kind of throwing back to that kind of a video.
There's a great great scene in a movie, which not many people like, I do, which is Signs.
I love that movie.
Right. It's a great film. And the way that they do the found footage or the sort of the VHS footage of the aliens is really scary. Like they really use it to full effect. You just see glimpses of them. And I think that this scene with the Zygon running could have been a little bit more like that if they'd have, you know, you can't have everything, but that would have been great.
Yeah. Actually, I like Shyamalan quite a bit. A lot of people like to hate on him, but I don't know. That's beside the point. So, yeah, they could have done a little bit more, but, yeah, I mean, we have what we have, and we really can't complain too much. But still, the uploading to YouTube feels like, hey, here's us being in touch with technology. And you see that a lot with CSI and with NCIS and those types of shows where somebody will try and be in this video game, or Castle. I think Castle has one episode. And you have this horrifically graphic or horrifically rendered video game, and the graphics are terrible. And they're like, oh, you're the Goblin Lord. Oh, that's awesome. And then that's all they really have to say about it. So you just have them trying to be in touch with that type of society. But being from the nerd half, yeah, it's not as stupid as you guys think it is. So I don't know.
Zoom in and enhance.
Yes, maybe I'm bothered by that, but
no,
I
hear you. That's one of the I spies of those kind of shows is laughing at things that try and be sort of slightly irrelevant, you know.
Yeah, hey, let's type on a keyboard and, oh, magic appears. But I don't know. Speaking of magic appearing, we know that Clara can control Bonnie at this point as well. We've seen already how she's interacted with Bonnie and the rockets, the missiles. And we kind of see the beginning of that here as well, where she's typing this conversation or this warning to the doctor, or this I'm awake message. And Bonnie doesn't know.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I like the idea that there is that sort of reciprocal link. It doesn't really make much sense that you could type on a keypad you can't see, but you just have to assume it's all happening on a sort of unconscious psychological level.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm wondering what else could she do on a subconscious psychological level? Like, you know, pull the gun out of her pocket and blow her head off. I mean, yes, graphic, I know, but if I have the ability to have somebody typing a message and they have no idea and they're imprisoning me, I'm just going to off them, you know?
That's the downside of the Zygon's master plan. Yeah.
I'm just thinking something that I said countless times to listeners of the Revolution podcast, always kill them when you have the chance. And we see the opposite of that both times this week. Bonnie doesn't kill Clara when she has the chance, and Clara doesn't kill Bonnie when she has the chance. Weird, because they're both kind of the same person, but still. It's just, I don't know, we have this hesitation, and the doctor makes a lot of those points. This is Doctor Who. It's kind of a passive type of show, but I don't know. Sometimes when you're imprisoned by somebody, you got to take matters into your own mind.
That's a slightly chilling...
I can be chilling, I know.
I wanted to talk about it a little later on. I just watched Spectre and that.
No, I haven't watched it yet.
It is, in a lot of ways, it tries not to do the stuff that Austin Powers makes fun of, but it also does the classic, just shoot him sort of, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost more extreme than many other Bond films in that regard, so.
Okay. But disappoints me.
Yeah, no, it is a great film, but we know what I was going to say, actually, to that point. I'll just get cut straight to it. Spectre is to Skyfall in some ways what Zygon Inversion is to Day of the Doctor.
Really?
which is to say that it's a sequel, but it's not tonally a sequel. But
yeah.
it uses the same sets, and it's like, I don't know, it's sort of, I found myself wondering if you could make a really good cut of Day of the Doctor putting Capaldi in, because he's in that same set,
right?
And he's talking about the Time War and things. Like, I think that would be a really cool thing to do, is to, so you would have him and Hurt and Tennant and,
Matt. Yeah.
And Matt Smith. Yeah. But this really isn't a sequel to Day of the Doctor. It's just using so much familiar stuff. And it's almost odd and quite weird to have the same set almost lockstop put back into place for a somewhat unconnected story.
Yeah. And I assume you're referring specifically to the Black Room, right?
Yeah, to the Black Archive, right.
Black Archive, yeah. I keep calling it a room. I called it a dark room a bit ago. I'll get the word in a bit. But yeah, it was very similar. And we saw something that I thought, man, we're really jumping ahead in the episode of Doctor Who. But we saw something at the end of this episode that I thought was brilliant, because we knew about it last season and in the Day of the Doctor with the mind being erased. But we saw that again, and they don't give that to us until the very end of the episode. I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I really like that too. And that was one of my favorite parts of Day of the Doctor was the Zygon truce, you know, where you can't remember which side you're on. And I was almost, I suppose, a little disappointed that they redid that in a slightly less, you know, in a diminishing returns way with the Osgood box.
Yeah, a little less impactful. And I think that's kind of why they gave it a little... almost a one-off kind of comment rather than a really heavy focus.
Yeah, definitely. But I love the fact that the safe house has a picture of William Hartnell covering the safe.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. And I think, so at this point in the show, you've got evil Clara wandering around Bonnie. How do you rate Jenna Louise Coleman's evil acting?
I think she's pretty. it was good. I like her much better as Clara, personally. I don't think she really comes across well as a bad guy to me. I could not. I would typecast her in the Clara type role, not in the villain type role.
And she's playing Queen Victoria next, I think, is her next big role. So she's, I don't know, be interesting to see. Because I've not really seen her in anything before Doctor Who. So it's interesting to see her sort of finally play another role in the show, in universe.
Wait, in universe?
Well, I suppose she also played about 1,000 other Claras too, but.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. When you said in universe, I had Queen Victoria and I was like, wait, is this Queen Victoria somehow related to Doctor Who?
Not that one. No, okay. But yeah.
That would have blown my mind. So yeah, it's interesting to see kind of how she plays a different style of role within Doctor Who. I think she'll be fine as Victoria personally because I don't know. I think she can get away with that. But being just kind of this villain with no goal other than to just make everybody suffer really didn't fit her for me. And that's probably because it's Clara, not necessarily because of Jenna. Personally, I don't know if Jenna was a bad actor. It kind of reminds me of Star Wars since it's coming up. We've already talked about the recent release of Bond. I don't know. I'm not going to blame Natalie Portman for Padme. It's not her fault. It's George Lucas's fault. So I kind of wonder if it's kind of the same thing with Clara here, with Jenna.
Well, George Lucas, I think, has to get some kind of award for coaxing a bad performance out of that many talented actors. I mean, you think you've got Samuel L. Jackson, Liam Schindler's List, Neeson, Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman. I mean, how many awards do they have between them?
Yeah.
And they all stink up the joint in those movies. The only person that gets out of Star Wars, I think, with any dignity is the guy that plays the Emperor. Who is just, I think, I mean, that's what being a bulletproof actor is. But it's interesting seeing Bonnie kind of like, they go just full, like, I mean, how many things does she break in a temper tantrum? Like, you really do get a sense that she's sort of, you know, sort of absolutely unhinged, and it did surprise me that the story wrapped up in the way it did, because she seems so volatile.
Yeah, I kind of wonder why she's volatile as well. We don't really have that answered. She does have this we're enslaved kind of feeling, but it's like, no, you're not. You made a decision to do this. I don't see how you really have a fair argument that the Earth isn't fair. You know, it's like, no, you're good. You invaded the Earth. You forfeit your right to be upset that you invaded the Earth, you know? But
yeah, it felt to me like what wasn't said was it's that sense of the Daleks had this of sort of purity, of racial purity, that, you know, why should I have to, you know, we are Zygons, we are beautiful, we are orange and we have suckers. You know, how dare you make us conceal our true forms? I felt like it was like that. It wasn't so much that they felt enslaved, that they just felt that there was something inherently immoral about having to look like human beings.
Okay. See, that works a little bit better for me. I was having really a hard time identifying with her.
Well, apparently I can think like a Zygon, so I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
I wonder what that says about you. I wonder what that says about me. But yeah, I mean, we had this kind of, this interesting performance and Bonnie just, how she's kind of being worked by Clara and how Clara's being kind of manipulated by her as well. And we have the Doctor too. One scene kind of early on, because I think half of this episode occurred in the Black Archive, but the Doctor is not very subtle. He's not regained any concept of that word. The why are you winking at me thing. It was kind of funny, but then he kept going on. And then the Doctor tells Clara that she shouldn't tell Bonnie where the Osgood box is, what's in it. And it's like, well, is he trying to set up a trap? Is he trying to be, I don't know, that blunt about it? What's he going on about there?
It's never quite clear, is it? Like, why he feels like he gives more away than, like, if you're going to manipulate everyone to be at that table with those boxes, there are probably better ways of doing it. Because it feels like he does put Clara at real risk by pointing out the fact that she is able to control Bonnie.
Yeah, and I wonder if he's saying that because he thinks it'll give her the best chance to survive if Bonnie knows that she's valuable. because there's several points in this episode I've already kind of mentioned where I'm thinking, if Bonnie was a smart commander, she would have already destroyed Clara. Clara is no longer useful to her, but she never does. So maybe that's why the doctor says that, to kind of buy Clara some time.
That's very true. I also wasn't quite clear what the deal was with the policemen. I mean, I assume they were Zygons, but they just, a bunch of sort of silent police come and sort of menace the doctor and Clara, and it doesn't really pay off in any way. They just sort of get in a van and drive away. I wasn't quite sure what was going on there.
They're just kind of there. The doctor and Osgood kind of make their way away, and it seems weird. They didn't do anything but kind of chase them, but I don't know. They were just a plot device to get them to go where they ended up going, maybe. But they do end up at the mall where the video was taken by Bonnie of the Zygon being transformed. And then they find the Zygon in his true form, and he kills himself because he's afraid he's started this intergalactic war.
Yeah, that's a really, really touching scene. It is very sad, and it's played really well, I thought. Just to skip back for one moment, by the way, the back in the 70s, they used sinister policemen in the same way, but very similar to this. And it was the BBC got a hold over the coals in Parliament, the equivalent of having questions asked in Congress about it. So, because they felt it was teaching kids not to trust policemen. So I thought it was funny to see them do that again.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting that they can get themselves into trouble there. But I don't know how many people watch it and really expect to not trust the cops because of Zygons taking over.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point.
I don't know. To me, it's sci-fi, but I'm also 30. I'm not a kid anymore. But no, so yeah, the man, I don't know if we caught his name, who is the Zygon that was videoed, but he's kind of struggling with this whole concept of what's going on. And we have this, it seems like 5 minutes of the episode, I think, roughly, where they're kind of struggling to convince him not to kill himself. And I think it was kind of touching that he does, because he doesn't want to, it seems like he doesn't want to start a war, but it could be because he regrets having already started the war. I'm not positive on that.
Yeah, it was a lovely scene. I know a grumble that some Classic Who fans have about the new show is that quite a few of the monsters, or some of the monsters in the original series, have been had their rough edges softened a bit. So the Sontarans, like Strax,
yeah,
used to be flat out villains, and now they're sort of, you know, a bit more, you know, the comic relief, or they're on the side of the good guys. But I like this. It's the reverse of that, really. The Zygons are not necessarily the, you know, one dimensional villains, but the extra dimensions are actually kind of touching and quite sad.
Yeah. And, you kind of say that the Strax, he's softened, but, I think the Zygons have softened a bit as well, which is why in, The Magician's Apprentice, and I think it was The Witch's Familiar specifically, where the doctor is kind of playing Davros and convincing him to shock him and all of that jazz. There's a lot that happens in The Witch's Familiar, but we kind of have at that moment, it looks like the Daleks are softening, or not the Daleks necessarily, but Davros at one point in that. And we have kind of the actual conclusion is he hasn't softened at all. It was just a ploy. And I'm glad to see at least one classic species or one classic baddie is still a classic baddie. They're still the exterminate. That's their purpose. And yeah, we've seen the opposite of that with other bad guys. We've seen the almost a humanization of everybody else. And we almost saw that with Davros. But thankfully, he's just an evil and conniving little Dalek.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think it's just about making a more complex show, you know, what we haven't seen actually are the Sea Devils, and they were always my favorite, race from the classic series, give or take. And actually I used to pot around with an idea for a script. and it would have been the sort of H.P. Lovecraft, Massachusetts 1930s town, by the sea. And the Sea Devils would have been in it. And at the end, I actually had them kind of come in as the cavalry to save everyone. So, you know, I think it's okay to do that from time to time.
It is, but kind of like the Borg in Star Trek, you need you need a bad guy who's always a bad guy. You need a constant. And so it is good to have development with some, because we don't want flat villains. We want complicated villains. We want complicated heroes. But at the same time, like I said earlier, some men just want to watch the world burn. Some people just want to destroy everything. And I'm glad to see that from some villains. The Zygons, I do like the fact that they can get along with humanity. They can conform. And we see ultimately with the resolution of this episode, the truth of that statement. But like I said earlier, sometimes it's just good to have a bad guy that can be depended upon to be bad.
But, yeah. Yeah. You make a great analogy, because that is the Borg. Like they used to be absolutely fantastic in like the best of both worlds when they first show up. They're terrifying, and then they tried to do a bit more and a bit more with them, and they just suddenly stop working, and now they're completely, you know, they lack any kind of menace.
I take it you're not a Voyager fan.
No, I am not a Voyager fan.
Speaking of Kate, yeah, so I don't know. I'm going to go from Kate Mulgrew to Kate Lethbridge-Stewart. We have at this point in the episode the revelation that she is indeed the real Kate. I like having that. I liked being proven correct. And I like that she was smart enough to realize that. And tell us about your touchdown moment.
Yes. Well, it was a little thing. But one of the most famous lines in Doctor Who is, it's in an episode called The Demons. And there is a statue that's come to life. It's about 4 foot tall. So it's like a gargoyle. And it's menacing this village. And the brigadier that Kate's dad turns up with some soldiers. And he just sort of raises an eyebrow and says, "Chap with wings there, 5 rounds rapid. It's like, and of course they shoot him. And it was just like, it's such a weird blasé line to come out with. And it was, and to have the daughter do that line is great. But it actually is completely thematically in touch with her dad's line back in the '70s, because, you know, how did you get away from this Zygon? Tell us everything. Oh, I just shot him.
Yeah.
I just shot the guy. It's kind of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, isn't it? Where Indy takes out the gun and just
the shoots guy with the sword.
Yeah.
That's probably the best scene in a lot of movies. I want to call him Han Solo. Harrison Ford did a lot for the characters he played, but I think it's interesting. It's good to see Kate just resolving that situation, protecting herself. But then we have this scene where she's also protected the doctor and Osgood. She's kind of freed them. And the doctor makes his standard, "Why did you have to kill them?" kind of statement. And I can understand where he's coming from. I can identify with the doctor, but at the same time, he's not really made this same complaint about the dozens and dozens of hair piles that we've seen throughout the last couple of episodes.
It's very true. Yeah. It's
like, why does war always have to lead to somebody dying or something like that? I can't remember the exact quote he says, but it's like, you're not that broken up about the people you claim to care about, but when they defend themselves, you get broken up. I don't know. That rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, there's a very interesting scene in the original Terror of the Zygons, where the Brigadier actually kills a Zygon. And it's interesting to see, it's so well acted. Like, you get the sense he really doesn't want to do it. But when the Zygon starts to attack him, it's right at the end. If you watch Terror of the Zygons, this was our homework last week, it's probably almost the last scene. He just knows he's got to do it, and he does it. Right. And that's sort of what the Doctor isn't quite able to get. Right. And have they done an episode of Doctor Who where they address that? I don't think they really have.
No.
Yeah. Cause he is responsible for a lot of death, and there are times where he's carrying objects that might not be a gun, but it basically functions as such.
Right.
That happens a lot too.
Yeah. And the point is often made, even this season, we've seen the point of he trains his companions to be soldiers for him, so he doesn't have to have the blood on his hands. So, it shocks me that he's so uncomfortable with that that truth, but at the same time, it's a very common theme throughout Doctor Who. I mean, he's constantly creating these companions to fight for him, and I think it's fun to see the writers deal with that, to see the character have to go through that, and I'm really, really excited to see kind of from what we saw with the girl who died, where he finally realizes who he is and what his faith stands for. And he's the man, or he saves people. I'm glad to see that. But at the same time, I still want him to, I want the resolution of the soldier kind of thing, the soldier theme to be, brought to a conclusion, because it really seems to be a strong theme with Capaldi.
It does. It does. Yeah. So they're in the Black Archive. They get up to the Osgood boxes and they take them out.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, was I missing something? They look exactly like the moment. They look like mini moments.
Yeah.
You remember the device?
Right.
I assume that's deliberate.
Yeah, I assume it is too. They made a point even to mention that the doctor, had a button to press as well at one point, and that alludes to the day of the doctor.
Yeah, which is sort of what I was saying about Spectre, and it is very much like that with Skyfall, that it's alluding to something, but it doesn't tonally match it, so it's kind of odd. Mm-hmm. You think, why would you go to the extent of referencing a previous story, of using the same sets and props, and then not really picking up a lot of the content from that? But that's fine. It was kind of cool to see that the little mini moment boxes, and and then we come to our sort of like prisoner's dilemma almost, I suppose, or it's the 50-50 chance of survival or obliteration.
Yeah, let's play a game. And I thought it was definitely kind of a fun moment. We have this kind of Princess Bride type trap. The blue one will reveal you, or I can't remember exactly what the doctor says, but he's telling Bonnie, press the blue one, and she's like, wait a second. And so we kind of see this, you would tell me to drink from this cup, but I'm actually going to drink from this cup. So we kind of see real quick a thought process, but she does make a decision, and it's great. She presses the button, and boom, there's two more buttons.
Right. Right, which was lovely. And then you realize exactly what's happening. It's like, okay, so it's cut the red wire, cut the blue wire. You don't know which is which.
Yeah. And I was actually wondering, is there a third, fourth, fifth layer? How many buttons do we go down?
Oh, right. You press one under something else, like a little drawer comes out. Yes. Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We don't see that. I imagine that there are, in one of the 15 times we see, or we don't see that happened, but I'm unsure. So, it was definitely kind of a fun scene. There was a lot. This room filled a lot of the episode, and there was a lot of dialogue here with Kate and with Bonnie trying to, or the doctor's trying to convince them to stand down, to not press any buttons. And ultimately, that's his goal. And we kind of find out that the Osgood box had no ability to do anything. It was all just kind of a clever mind game that would be used with the ability to erase your memories for short term, or maybe even long term. I'm not positive, but, and you could keep playing the game until you made the right decision.
Yeah. And I the one spoiler I did get about this episode before I saw it was, the doctor had a very long speech about war, and I'm not sure if you time it how long it is when he's trying to persuade her not to press a button, but it doesn't feel long. Like, and I suspect it's something like two or 3 minutes, but I don't know. It to me, it was a remarkable scene, even if you don't necessarily agree with the sentiment. It was that I am the doctor moment, but done a little bit differently.
Yeah. And it was great. I thought, you know, he's talking about the war that he's experienced, the heartbreak that he's experienced, and he doesn't want anybody else to have to go through that. And I love that Capaldi's doctor is finally coming to that realization. We see early last season, am I a good man? And we see the Daleks say that you'd make a good Dalek. And we have a lot of that confusion for Capaldi's doctor, for number 12. And then in this season with the girl who died, we finally get the doctor realizing he's a doctor who saves. He is a good doctor. He's a doctor that cares. And ultimately, he's a doctor that doesn't want to see war tear apart the rest of the universe or the galaxy. I mean, that is the doctor. And I think that's it was a great speech. I didn't really pick up anything political, because for me, that's who the doctor is. And I know I complain about sometimes him being frustrated when some people have to kill to save people, but the Doctor doesn't want to see anybody die, and that's who he really represents, even if he can be edgy or funny or old or apologetic about everything. He's always had that theme.
Yeah, I agree completely. I Capaldi's obviously a great actor, and he knows that this is a big moment that people will remember. But I think this is like the clip show scene. You know, when they talk about the 12th Doctor, that will be the sequence that we see. And it sort of reminds me a little bit of some of the, well, I keep talking about classic Doctor Who tonight. I've really been nostalgic because there are so many Easter eggs in this episode, but there are one or two scripts where the Doctor does that. He basically says, look, what's the end goal? Like, once you've taken over the universe, he says this to the Cybermen, actually, in a story that never got made in the 90s. He says, so what happens? Like, what do you do? So imagine that you eradicate everything else. What then? Like, there's no point to this. Mm-hmm. And I sort of like that. And I also like that he does say eventually, sooner or later, you're going to have to sit down and talk. Like, whatever happens, that will happen. And it's funny, if you even think about like the Nuremberg trials it does always come down to that in the end. So why not just skip to that? Which I actually thought was quite a smart sentiment. It wasn't just don't kill all the humanity. It's also, and that's that lovely line. When you fire that first shot, you don't know. You feel right, and you may well be, but you don't know who's going to get killed. It's not the person that you're shooting at. It's all the other people that will happen as a result of that. And you can't predict that, and that's the problem. And I think that might be alluding a little bit to some of Tony Blair's policies with Iraq. I'm not sure, but I think it's that you do something with the best of intentions, but then the consequences are so unpredictable. That's why you can't do it. I don't know.
Yeah, there's truth and there's consequences. Right. I think it's funny because there's no or. It's truth and consequences. It'll always come out. The truth will always find you out. You will always have consequences. There will always be repercussions to the actions you take. Even if they're the right actions, there's still somebody that's going to probably suffer. And I complain about this a lot in podcasts and even more so to my wife. In chick flicks, there's always a man or a woman who's the lover, the boyfriend, the girlfriend of the main character who falls in love with somebody else. And they always get heartbroken. But nobody resolves the heartbreak of the supposed bad husband or the supposed bad boyfriend. And you see a lot of that from movies like The Notebook and from people like Nicholas Sparks. They'll often come in and write these stories. And not specifically The Notebook. There was another one that my wife recently watched that enraged me, because it was so unbelievable. But you just have these actions taken by the character, like the good person, because, oh, my husband's such an evil person. Not really. You're the one cheating on him. But that's never resolved. So there's consequences to every action that you take. And we often shy away from those consequences. And I like the point that the Doctor is making and the writers of Doctor Who are making with that is whether or not your actions are right or wrong, somebody is still going to suffer those consequences, be them good or bad. So it kind of makes us as viewers reflect on the policies that we might support and things like that. And while we may end up still on different sides of that argument, it kind of gives us a moment to step back and think about the others in those wars. And we've, again, you mentioned it last week. We've seen that in the past. We saw last year, with the boy and how that kind of brought up kind of a storm as well by itself, just with what happened and how he died. So I'm monologuing like the Doctor. Sorry.
No, you're fine. It's funny. I picked up a glass of water. And as I looked over to do that, my eyes went up to a book that I forgot was on my bookshelf right above my PC. And it's Homage to Catalonia by George Orwell, which is, again, that's a book that says you've got to do something. You've got to step in.
Yeah.
You've got to, but at the same, so just to your point about, you know, pacifism isn't necessarily always the best answer. I from a different perspective, I would agree with that. But also what Orwell says in that book, which is interesting, is he's talking about everybody connecting and having a more just society. And he says that, you know, when you're a customer in a restaurant, you can't treat the waiter like a thing, or like a waiter. He's not a waiter. He's a person. He's doing a waiter's job, but he's not a waiter. He's a person. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, the waiter can't treat you like a customer either.
Right.
And so that, and that's a level of empathy that you need to have. And it just seemed pertinent. I looked up and I suddenly noticed that book there, which.
Yeah.
I don't want to come across as someone that is necessarily a complete sort of non-interventionist, because that's not true either. But this episode, I honestly, it really has blown up. We were joking about it at the start of the program, but that speech has gone fairly global. And I sort of wonder what impact that will have on Doctor Who, if people will start to target it, or if it will become like a more politicized show. I don't know. I'll be very curious to see.
Yeah. Well, when you said you looked up on your bookshelf, I thought you were going to say you saw a Nicholas Sparks book up there. But
yeah. No, I can. It's Homage to Catalonia is on one side, it's J.G. Ballard's quotes. And on the other side, it's Courtney Love, the real story.
Nice.
And next to that is the history of Salem Village witchcraft. I can go on, but there is no, I don't know what the notebook is. Particularly. Right,
well, consider yourself lucky.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, you say this doctor's speech has gone viral, if you will. But
yep.
I think it's very interesting as well, because we've seen kind of in Doctor Who, a good man goes to war. And we kind of, we've seen similar in the past. We've kind of dealt with a similar topic. But I think it's interesting to see kind of where we're going here, where we've been, and then where we're going at the end of the season. The next four episode titles are very interesting, and there's a lot coming. So we're going to be seeing a lot coming up with the Doctor. And I think some of those might continue to delve into this topic.
Yeah, and the BBC released a synopsis of the upcoming episodes with probably 3 or 4 weeks out. So they just released the penultimate episode synopsis, which I've not read, but is supposedly very, very spoilery. So we're at that point now where we're sort of in the home stretch, you know, and we're gonna get into the really sort of consequence filled.
Yeah.
Episodes. I'm loving that it's Doctor Who is just a little bit later in the year. We talked about this in other Don't Blink episodes, but it's a real dark and stormy night tonight here in Baltimore. And because there are times where it's virtually being screened in the summer and it just doesn't work. Like, it's much, much better this time of year. So.
Yeah.
And next week is a spooky one. I know we don't do, you don't watch the previews, but we've got right. a real creepy one coming up.
Actually, yeah, last season ended. This would have been the podcast that ended the season. It ended on the 8th of November, which that's when Death in Heaven aired. So we had a month and a half before the Christmas episode. And this season we go from December 5th to December 25th. It's going to be a little bit shorter. It's a month shorter. I think it's going to be very nice just to kind of have, not to have that wait.
That's great, because the wait doesn't work either way. Like, you know, it's too long, even if it's really good. And if it's not a good Christmas special, it feels like too much anticipation. I'm looking specifically at the wardrobe episode, which was, yes. Oh my God. But, and then December 1st, I'm going to be busting out the Christmas stuff and I'll put a Doctor Who on without question. So
yep.
getting into the Christmas spirit. So
yeah. But yeah, before we really end this episode of Doctor Who, we had the great dialogue, but we also had this moment between Osgood and the Doctor, and it's very interesting at the end of this episode. The Doctor offers Osgood, hey, come with me. You see her go, hey, I want to, and then you have her kind of say, but I can't.
Yeah, I feel like the character of Osgood has drifted a little bit. Like, I almost liked her more as the Day of the Doctor, sort of clumsier.
Mm-hmm.
And here she sort of steps up. It's a bit like the way that Mickey develops from being,
yeah,
you know, someone tripping over his own feet to being a sort of action hero. And that's all good. But it did get me wondering if a Zygon copies a person, that does mean if they copied Osgood, so there's a second Osgood, the Osgood in this episode must have been the person one.
I think that's kind of a clue as to what's going on. They never actually admit or reveal which Zygon is human, which Zygon is Zygon, or if they're both Zygon. You have Bonnie, who's ended up being the commander of the bad guys to, hey, now I'll support the good stuff. So we see her kind of come along, and they don't tell us who we're talking to. To me, the way I kind of look at it is the way you look at it, or you mentioned that the Zygon copied the real Osgood. So there's a Zygon and Osgood. They don't answer that question. So it's kind of like the face of Bo. We're left with an assumption that I think we can strongly point to, but at the same time, we don't know.
Yeah, we know, and we don't know. But I think it's, I actually loved that they not only copy Sylvester McCoy's costume with the second Osgood, or the third, I suppose she is, but they do the nerdiest iteration of it possible with the duffel coat, with the brown duffel coat. That was my nerd moment. I was like, oh, it's the Curse of Fenric costume, completely ignoring any moral element that was being put on there. But yeah, I guess double Osgood is good.
Yeah. They did kind of give us a clue into it as well, though, with an interview during the commercials regarding Osgood, and the actress said that she tried to give, essentially she makes a comment like fanboy viewers will be able to tell who's who. And to me, that's kind of the unofficial, hey, yeah, one's human. So,
oh yeah, I guess that's it. I guess that's the answer. So
I'm going to read too much into that.
Yeah, do. That's what we're here for.
Hey, exactly. See what sticks.
See what sticks. So I loved it. I thought it was good. I think that there's often a mid-season slump in Doctor Who, and we've got the reverse this time. We've got a really tight couple of episodes that people are talking about. There's a paradox because the ratings, it's absolutely been killed in the ratings. And I don't think there's any danger of it being cancelled, but it's funny that the show is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and the ratings in the UK are just dire. So
really,
yeah.
Well, like I've seen on Wikipedia, they're saying what, 20% audience share. That sounds pretty good to me.
Well, not when you've got that many, that finite amount of channels is the thing. So, you know, yeah, it's not like a cable model where you've got, you know,
150.
Right. You've got, essentially you've got a dozen or a half dozen, a good solid ratings grade for a show on a Saturday night would be 8 million viewers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's doing at about 4.
Right.
So, and that's actually, which we'll come to in a moment, but that was the ratings that Doctor Who got when it was canceled in the 80s. Now, it's not going to happen for a bunch of reasons, but it's pretty bad. And part of it is because it's on so late. I mean, the kids can't watch it, which is like half the audience. But yeah, I think it's funny that something that's that big is dying domestically in the ratings. And I hope that they don't blame Capaldi for it, because he's obviously just great in this role.
Yeah, but that being said, he still gets kind of mixed opinions from viewers. And I've heard both sides of that coin. So I don't know. I love Capaldi. I think he's great for the Doctor. It's good to see an older kind of guy come in. But it's funny. I've actually heard some people say they don't want another old Doctor, and some people say they don't want another young Doctor. So I don't know. I hear everything. And this is from friends that I speak to in person. This isn't that I'm looking on the internet. These are actually local hicks here in Oklahoma that agree, so, or disagree on what they think about this actor. So he's definitely, to me, he's contentious, I guess. A lot of people have an opinion about him, kind of like a lot of people liked Matt Smith and some people really hated him. So I think everybody loves Tennant, though. He's great.
Everybody loves Tennant. Yeah. I was not a huge Matt Smith fan. I like what he was doing, but I felt that was for a younger audience. And I didn't quite feel like he was my Doctor. But like, I got it. But like, Capaldi, I feel, is more like my Doctor.
Yeah.
So hopefully the Christmas special will go gangbusters when that comes on. And it will, and I'm sure Who will be on at an earlier time next year. They have commissioned another full series.
Right. Right.
So that's good news.
Yeah, it probably won't be on next year, though. They'll be, what, specials? Or are they actually going to try and compete with Sherlock?
Yeah, I think that what they're going to do is make the full set. But whether they break them up over 2 years like they did with season six is the question, I suppose.
So, okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, speaking of season six, it's not quite classic Who, but tell us what you can. Do we have any episode or homework this week?
Yes, we do. And so, okay, the idea of classic Doctor Who homework is that we cherry pick the best of the old series, because there's so much of it, and tie it in thematically with the new series. Well, we're going to do something a bit different this week, and I'm going to recommend one that's, in some senses, not very good. But I think you should see it, and it's called Battlefield. Okay. And it's a Sylvester McCoy episode. It's the first episode of the last series of the classic show. And the script is magnificent. It's one of my favorite Doctor Who scripts. And the idea is it's set in the near future. And Arthurian knights from another dimension have come through and are duking it out. And humans are caught in the middle. It does look really bad. It's shot on that kind of video that looks like it's like a sort of someone's home movie. Like it has that horrible outside broadcast video quality. And the music is terrible. But it's an amazing script, and it really shows you what Doctor Who could become. And it has one of my favorite speeches of all time at the end from the show, when the Doctor is trying to talk Morgaine Le Fay from Arthurian legend down from pressing the nuclear button. And it's just fantastic. So if you watch this, please do go out, get it on Netflix. They have the discs. Be prepared that it looks a little ropey, but there's so much substance to it. And I would love to see what people think about that, because it's the beginning of the end of classic Doctor Who, and you can see both the horrible production quality and the real imagination that's taking off. And it was that imagination that went on and kind of lingered in the 90s to pick up where we are now and keep the torch kind of burning.
Yeah. All right, well, that sounds good. And you said, what was the title of it again?
It's called Battlefield.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the season 26. I don't think it's on Netflix streaming, but it is certainly on the shelves in the stores, and you can get the discs from Netflix too. In fact, all of the not to buzz market, but all of the classic Doctor Who discs are on Netflix. So anything you want to watch today, we'll send them to you within a day.
All right. Well, I do the streaming, so maybe I'll have to look into discs, but.
Yeah, yeah. And the extras are good too. I mean, I think that if the BBC did a really cool job with the DVDs, and the story's just part of it. The package that you get on the discs is great. So even if you're just renting it, it's well worth getting, because you get so much cool behind the scenes stuff.
All right. Well, speaking behind the scenes, we don't really have much behind the scenes, but we do have feedback and theories, crazy theories. I make plenty of them. We want to hear your crazy theories, your wild guesses, and, you can leave that feedback to us or with us at 304-837-2278 or visit us at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You could also find us on Twitter at Rogue Oracle, O-R-R-A-C-L-E is how you end that. Rogue is spelled correctly. Or at GSM Podcasts. And you can also reach us at Facebook at facebook.com/goldenspiralmedia. And until next week, I don't know. Nine rounds rapid. That's all I've got. So.
We can do it on the count of three. Shall we?
You want to do it together?
Yeah, let's do it together. So, and we're keeping all this in. We're not editing any of this. So, until next week, on the count of three, 1, 2, 3. Let Zygons be Zygons.
I am the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission by Silver Screen Records. They're composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster, taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.